Hi everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Nevermind podcast, where we're here to help people in mental health. I'm joined today with our co-host Chris Evans. Say hi, Chris.
Hi, how's it going? You okay?
And we've also been joined with our special guest today, Jamie McGovern. Jamie, you know, it's lovely to have you on the show. How's things with you as well? Chris, are you all good?
Yeah, great. Really good that it's a second podcast. Really great that it's got a good following already. And really happy that Jamie has agreed to come on and speak about what positions and what he does in the mental health community to help everybody. Really good fella, Jamie.
Yeah, it's you know what? I'm really happy that we're actually experiencing our second podcast. And like you said, it's been great having people give feedback on our first one. And Jamie, you know, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you do and how a little bit about your journey, if that's okay?
Yeah, so basically I'm a trade union representative first and foremost, do lots of work in the mental health field, do lots of mental health disability risk assessments, for example, in the workplace. I think we've tried to innovate over the last 5 or 6 years, and I helped set up the Northwest Mental Health Support Network for our trade union, and there's just over 300 members on that now.
Wow.
Big Chris is one of them. And thankfully, it's a thriving community, and there's lots of really positive conversations occurring in workplaces.
Good. And how do you go about getting something like this started? I mean, that's to have 300 people kind of involved must be really a really good experience when you all kind of meet up.
Yeah, I mean, now it's really grown. I mean, originally we realised there was an absolute need to look at mental health in the workplace and how we support people in the workplace. And, you know, many people have mental health disabilities or mental ill health for a period of time. And our network was set up because we identified that far too few conversations were occurring in the workplace, and there was still stigma. And we needed that holistic approach, you know, person-centered approach to getting results for individuals, to get them back into the workplace and get them supported.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chris, you're involved, aren't you? So this is how you kind of connected us.
Yeah, so how we came across, so me and Jamie have known each other for a few years now. We hit it off straight away, really. We got on with each other, and then Jamie identified, or I was quite open talking with Jamie about my attempted suicide 14, 15 years before, how I speak about it and that. So Jamie said, we're doing a mental health first aiding course through the union. I think you should come on it. There's a place for you. So not just only to help others, but to understand my own thoughts and what my thought pattern was and what triggers I had and all this. And
yeah,
we went, I think it was Warrington, I met, there's about 20, 25 others in there, and that meeting was totally eye-opening to me that so many people are out there crying for help. And how many good people are like Jamie, are out there to help. And you have to go and find this help because it is there. And, you know, I had the 2-day course with Jamie and AD Prince. And the stuff that we talked over, it ticked so many boxes for myself. And then, you know, that's how I became a mental health first aider. And, you
which is amazing. It's really amazing. It's nice to see, you know, obviously from bad starts, you know, with you know what happened ago. But it sounds to me like having a community of people like minded who share the same problems is like invaluable to be able to have that support.
I think that's what it is, isn't it, Jamie? That we all think alike. We all are out there. I think I brushed over it because what's come now out of my doing this, I'm in another role, but actually I've gone into other mental health first aiding classes that I did. Jamie and AD have asked me to come back and talk to the class about my battles, you know, my attempted suicide and my attempted suicide last year or the year before. And, you know, I talk about it. I'm open and honest. I don't shy away from it. I don't think you should. And some of the comments I've had after them passed through Jamie and AD have been mind-blowing, that people are so understanding, that they're not judgmental, and they're so thank you for telling us our story. And, you know, if anything, it's only Jamie and AD that has got me into this mental health first aiding, you know, this empathy, this understanding, massive. I think me and we went to the conference, didn't we, Jamie? And we had a few drinks and we sat down and we sort of gelled over stories of parents and grandparents and stuff. And we sort of gelled and we get on really well, Jamie. We've got this understanding of, you know, how I work and how I like to be out, you know, like the whole thing with me, because I've got this undiagnosed ADHD, that I don't stop talking. And
well, it's funny you say that, because mine's undiagnosed as well, but I have lots of different parts of ADHD symptoms, which is funny that we're able to start understanding a little bit more now. But this sounds to me then, Jamie, you're a big part of us even being here now, having this conversation on the Nevermind podcast. So hats off to you. It sounds like hadn't been around, we might not have been here ourselves. So
Chris is doing himself a disservice there. I think he plans his own journey because of the person he is. I mean, he's an immense character, and he's done so much for our mental health first aid community because he's been able to share his story. And being open and honest is, you know, it's quite rare. But then when someone is open and honest, people who are then experiencing similar journeys are able to say, well, actually, I'm not in isolation. There's people who experience suicidal ideation quite often. But, you know, our message is there is a hope for recovery. And Chris is a fine example of just someone who's embarked on this journey. And, you know, he's an example of, you know, that recovery model, that, you know, recovery is possible. But conversations are the starting point to everything. Every layer of support has to start with a conversation. And thankfully, Chris is one of those people who's receptive to conversations.
Yeah. And how did you guys have that initial conversation? So obviously we're here to help others in situations where they feel like there's no other way out. No one understands. Because I know, as well as you guys, when you're in that state, you feel like no one else is ever going to understand how you feel. So it's quite difficult to reach out or even have the place to reach out to. So how do you go about that, Jamie? What's the kind of process for people who are really seeking that?
I think what you've got to is present yourself in a way where you're believable, number one, and you have to tell people, you know, you've got to listen and hear and you want to support. And then there's a way to listen, you know, in when we do in our classes, we explain to people that body language, the way to listen, the way to understand is very much driven by us as characters and individuals. With Chris, it was easy for me to just nurture a conversation with Chris because he does like to speak, he will share everything open, and he is an open book. But then through that conversation, you're able to create a mental health support plan, you know, but very often people don't feel like, you know, they want to speak because they're worried about being judged.
Yeah.
Or they're worried about where it's going to go. But if you reassure people and you show people, you know, an act of human compassion, it can go a long way and it can make people talk, and conversations do change absolutely everything.
Do you have, Jamie, I suppose there's different types of people that you have, you know, joining you on this journey. I suppose Chris might be a bit of an anomaly because he's so open and you know, he really gets stuck in. But for those that aren't perhaps like that way inclined, is there a way that you extract that or ease them into, you know, to talking and reaching out?
Yeah, there is a way. I mean, you have to say that there's a supportive process available to them, but you let them decide when they want to make the approach back. You know, you reach out, you send out an olive branch and say, we're here to support.
Yeah.
We're able to support, and we can give you examples of how we supported others, but we'll do this at your choice of time. We never rush anyone into it. We let them come towards us, and when they're ready, we will have a meaningful conversation with them about their mental health and what they need to then be supported in work and outside of work going forward. Because I'll be honest with you, a lot of people are confused about mental health in terms of how they think it's complicated doing mental health risk assessments and,
yeah,
and
conversations. I agree.
And it's not, it's absolutely not at all complicated. It's very, very straightforward.
You know, now, Jay, I know your story and that, but how did you, what made you get into this mental health, you know, from the Mental Health Network? What made you as a person to go into it?
I think, again, because I could see so many things occurring in the workplace and outside of the workplace, and I realised there was not much going on in terms of innovation where, you know, you need to take a conversation and think about it in its simplest terms. I mean, for me, I had a little bit of a struggle when, you know, I went through bereavement and, you know, I realised that, you know, life is far from imperfect. But also, I think, looking at it from a mental health first aid instructor's perspective, you know, there wasn't enough conversations going on. And I realised that, you know, if I was going to make a difference, I needed to be a person who instigated conversations and made conversations happen and changed the workplace for the better, because unfortunately the conversations that should take place don't often take place. And we've got an example that when you do take place, it can make things better.
Yeah. What are the kind of like things, the signs that, you know, because we're now in what, 2024, but you know, this must have been, this whole process, especially in the workplace, I can't imagine 10, if not 20 years ago, there was really a thing here for support much people in work. But what do people kind of have to experience when they're at work? Are they, what I'm trying to say here is, when you're in that kind of place and you're working, is there any symptoms and signs, even maybe perhaps before the person may know that they're experiencing mental health? Is there certain things to watch out for and kind of understand that could help?
Yeah, I think work pressures can trigger a lot of issues in terms of, you know, mental health and common triggers. Work pressure can increase stress massively. You know, we see that quite often. Work pressure does influence people's behaviours in terms of the mental health and behaviour change. I think the pandemic played a big part as well, because the people we represent were key workers. And I think when, you know, the badge was put on us as key workers, people saw it as a badge of honour. But then very quickly they realised it was probably a badge of risk being key workers in the pandemic. And the stress really did rise for lots of people. I mean, we notice as well, though, that if there is a lack of empathy in general from others, it can actually worsen people's mental health.
Really? You know,
yeah, people with mental health struggles going on, they do need a listening ear.
Yeah.
You know, they need empathy. They certainly don't need pity or sympathy or someone telling them what they think they need. You know, we need to listen to people and then make a change based on what the individual is telling us, rather than us telling them what they need.
Yeah.
You know, we need to listen. And, you know, if we do listen in the right way, we can support in the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. And Chris, you know, being the man of experience here and being there, especially in the workspace, because I've got my own company. So I don't know. It's quite funny because I'm on the other realm of this, where in actual fact, over my years and starting my business, I actually had no support really from, you know, because especially you don't want to talk to people that you know, if, you know, when you find it very difficult. But in the very early days for me, it was hard. I mean, it was crazy. I got an investment to start my business, and I, funny enough, got offered a job at the same time on the same day. It was kind of crazy. It was a job I always wanted, and then also the investment I always wanted. And I spoke to my dad at the time. He said, "Do both," which, yeah, I mean, as you can imagine, it was very stressful. But with the months that were leading up to, you know, the first 6 months of starting this, I got my office, you know, I got a team of people, I've done everything how I wanted. You know, it's the first time of me doing this. It was incredibly hard. And you can't speak to anybody, because I was supposed to be the boss, so I couldn't be seen to be, you know, being seen to be weak in some ways. And that's how, what you feel like at the time. And I really went through a mad journey at that time, because it was like, you know, you're going home and you're just feeling like really just tired, and, you know, the pressure of getting everything sorted. So I suppose, is there kind of things that you do, Chris, in your experience now that help you with this, things like what I've just mentioned?
When we were doing our training in Warrington, the stories that came out of there and how people's would identify that people in the workplace were going withdrawn, they were going overeating when they were in the canteen, going staying out for long breaks, isolating themselves. But one thing, and this Jay will back us up here because I do it, is you overspend on stuff.
Yeah.
Money doesn't mean anything, and it can go out, and all these little traits, all these little things that happen, I thought they were just me, but it's not that. That is your mental health. So the role I'm in now, that I work in a workshop with mechanics, yeah?
Yeah.
So we've got all sorts of issues. You're in a male-dominated workplace. So you've got young lads going on to the tool van. I won't use what tools they are, but they're coming up with 400, 500, 600 pounds worth of tools. And I've said to them, you're trying to cover something up there. Oh, what do you mean? I said, you're spending all this money to try and make yourself happy. To get that, we're back to endorphins.
Yeah.
The release. Yeah. So we overeat, we over, you know, some people go to the gym, they over exercise. It's
that's what I used to do.
Yeah, it'd be overwork. That's what my second attempt on my life, that was me going out, sorting everything else, everybody else's issues out, and forgetting my own self-worth and my own, you know, my own mental health. But this leads us on to a question, Jay. I know what you do.
Yeah.
What you come across major issues of people's mental health, psychosis, self-harm, everything in your workplace, because the workplace is massive that you cover. But what do you do at the end of the day to keep yourself in check? What release or what do you do?
Yeah, I think you're right, because I think sometimes I need to identify when I just need to take time for myself. So for me, I find it the most simple things, you know, go and walk in the dog, you know, I try and play a bit of golf, and, you know, also ironically listen to lots of podcasts, you mm-hmm. know, and music as well. You know, music can take you to a really good place. And but for me, I mean, I know if I had a day that's been quite impactful, I'll know then I need to do something for myself that day. And it could be as simple as just leaving my phone in the house, going and walking the dog, and just having an hour to myself. It's called like switch off mode, where you just switch off and just do something that is simple but effective.
I suppose we all need a switch off mode, and it's different from person to person. And mine is quite similar to yours, because I've got a dog, you know, and it's easier for me just to go and walk for a walk. Although when I didn't have a dog, I found it pretty difficult, because just to go for a walk sometimes by yourself, because I like to go in the country. I don't know about anyone else. Sometimes I just feel a bit weird walking around the country by myself. So I bought a dog in the end, just to kind of make it a little bit less weird. But, you know, I mean, even these things, it's like having that time and working out what those things are is really important. And I suppose it's a bit of like trial and error, isn't it? It's kind of, what can you do? Sometimes it might be someone going on and playing on the PlayStation, or it could be cooking some food, or like you say, listen to a podcast. But perhaps what we could do is, you know, we could come up with a list of things and put them on our platform, Your Linked. We can kind of say, these are things that people try that help. Maybe we could do like a percentage of, you know, how much they help for different types of people.
So in our up and coming podcasts, when we're bringing, I've spoken to Jamie about this before, but we've got these sisters that do breath work and cold water treatment, and that's how they keep themselves in check. And this is something that we, you know, I experience daily. So I'll be flat out doing my job. I'm also the county councillor. You know, I've got 4 kids, 3 French bulldogs, and a angry wife at home. My outlet is, one, promoting and being an advocate for mental health, but keeping myself in check, I go out onto the Clwydian Range, which overlooks where I'm from, Denby, where my mum was from, Llandernog, and my dad's from Bodfari, and I feel at peace. And this is what Jay is getting at, I know, is that you don't have to go out and spend thousands and thousands of pounds worth of money.
Yeah.
It's about your self-worth and sitting down. And if that's sitting down on a park bench and just watching the world go by, that's what it takes.
Yeah.
And Jay, I think we spoke in our first podcast, in this country, we've lost that idea that I need to do something for myself, because life stresses get too much. You know, we're here, there, taking kids there, dance classes, brownies, everything.
Don't you feel, just sorry to cut in there, Jay, Chris, but don't you feel sometimes that once you get used to this is almost like an overexertion thing. Once you get used to doing everything for everyone else first, when you do, I feel, try and do something yourself, then you're looked at as, you're not doing enough. I don't know if that's something you guys get, but I get that quite often. It's like you do lots and lots of things. You're trying to make everyone happy, doing all this stuff. Yeah. And then on the first interval that it's like, right, I need to take this for me. It's like, well, you can't do that, because people can almost take that for granted. Is that, do you kind of feel...
But you feel yourself, I do anyway, I feel guilty.
Yeah.
So before...
That's wrong, isn't it? You should feel like that.
So long before I went into the role that I was doing, that I met Jay, I actually was working 60, 70 hours a week as a mechanic.
Wow, that's a lot.
Family work was coming first. And that was programmed in me. So when I went into a national company where it was 36 hours a week, when I was going home at 3:30, 4 o'clock, I felt guilty and I couldn't switch off. And I'd be looking to do foreigners or go and work in the gap. I had to keep going. And that's when my mental health started, because I wasn't busy. And this is what a lot of people have come to me off our first podcast and goes and say, if I'm sitting at home doing nothing, I end up raiding the cupboards for food. I lie on the sofa on my phone.
The phone's a massive one. I mean, we all just sit there literally on Facebook. Sometimes I go on Instagram, I'm like, why am I back on? Sometimes I open my phone to do something, I find myself on Instagram without it. You're programmed that way. It's nuts.
That's the problem with the whole thing. You know, we spoke about this in our mental health first aid, in how we are led, you know, even adults, we press on about children and teenagers, but even adults are scrolling for hours through your phone.
Yeah.
You know, 10 years ago, we didn't have this problem as much, but now it just
everywhere. Takes over, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's nothing, you know, you might see some good memes about mental health or good quotes or that, but generally, you're just wasting your time, aren't you? Where you can be doing something much more productive for your own well-being, you know?
Yeah.
You don't have to be out making money, or you can be doing something for yourself or your mental health or your well-being or your positivity in your mind. That's what it's about to me.
I suppose it's all about balance. You know, everything's about balance and, you know, how much you're kind of indulging into something. Jamie, what's your thoughts on work-life balance, having kids or maybe not having kids? We're basically talking for everyone, you know, to tell everyone here. So have you seen or identified that?
I think I've definitely seen the world seems to be at a faster pace these days. You know, work seems to be very demanding for lots of people. You know, life just seems to move very fast and in almost a chaotic way. Everything's so fast paced. I think one of the best bits of advice I was given by someone, because I was asking them what they did for their mental health, and the person said to me, occasionally, I just slow down and I just hit the pause button, and, you know, and I'll go and, I mean, we're quite blessed. I'm in Liverpool, and we can go and walk down by the seafront there, or take a walk up the coast, up, you know, and we can just like sit down and enjoy life for a second in its beauty, and just watch things passing you by, but just hitting that pause button. because you will get back into the fast way the world is at the moment, because it seems to be nothing but the fast.
Yeah, it's really, like, lots
of people, and people are juggling things, you know, parents trying to juggle work and child commitments, and everyone seems to be racing around everywhere. But that really was good advice for me from a person who just said, occasionally just slow down and hit the pause button and just take time for yourself. And I try to do that as often as I can.
Do you have any kind of advice for people who don't know how to do that? So here's an example. You know, you wake up 7:30, you go have a shower, and then you sort, you know, the kids out and that kind of stuff, and then you take them to school. You know that general thing. By the time you stopped connected with yourself, you're basically tired. You know, yeah. Is there a time where you should go, hold on, I know everything is needed for me to do this stuff, but if I, you know, if I don't do something to stop, then I'm going to just want to explode. So is there a way that you should do that or tackle that throughout the day or identify it?
I think, well, what we say in our classes when we're teaching people is just occasionally have what they call a happy hour, where you do something for yourself once a day or once a week, which just switches you off from everything that's going on around you, because the world will continue to move at a furious pace, but people need to slow down, because we can become really tired, overweight, then we can become ratty, then our mental health's affected.
Yeah.
But just that 1 hour each day or each week where you say, you know what, I'm just going to take an hour for myself and just do what I need to do to get my well-being back on track. Because if you do keep your well-being in a good place, your mental health tends to be in a good place as well. Remembering what's good for you as well, you know, and trying to concentrate on coping mechanisms when life is becoming a bit tough, just do something that is solely for you as an individual.
What kind of coping mechanisms have you seen work the best from your members and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, music seems to be a central theme, either, you know, listening to music or playing music. We do see a lot of people who will do art stuff, you know, and they'll start taking up, you know, doing pieces of art or doing pencil drawings or artwork. We see a lot of people now take up running.
You know,
that seems to be quite common, you know. You also see people who will, like, you know, take up things that you don't normally see. You know, I've seen one guy who likes to, you know, go out and refurbish park benches. You know, he'll go and he says, you know, because I see people sitting on park benches, what I like to do is, when no one's around on a Saturday morning, I'll go up and I'll tidy the park bench, I'll clean it, and I might even give it a lick of paint so someone gets something sitting on that bench. And I thought, yeah, whatever works for you.
And it sounds to me it's not necessarily something everyone knows already. So it could be a case that go and seek something else, something new. Or if you've had an idea or something that you wanted to do, try it, you know, give it a go, because why not?
Yeah. Embrace difference as well, because every one of us is different. We're all wired in different ways. Embrace difference. If someone likes doing something and it doesn't appeal to you, let them continue to do it, because it works for them. Don't tell them not to do it. Just get something out of life that you enjoy.
But that's a problem. We brushed over this last podcast. We're so worried about looking over the fence at other people, what they're doing. And, you know, take me, for instance, I'll go out with a bin bag and the two kids and litter pickers, and we'll pick rubbish up. And I like doing it. I feel like I'm giving something, and, you know, I can go to work in the morning and the place is tidy. That's one of my releases, if you like. But we are too, if, you know, like Jay was saying there, I know he's got a chap that he looks after that's a massive artist and takes pictures into the offices, and they're brilliant. And it's a release. And we don't have to all be Picasso. Do you know what I mean? It's just having.
But if you really look at Picasso's art, it's actually not that great. We could all be Picasso, actually. You're hidden in Picasso.
It's all being creative, isn't it? That's what it's about. It's engaging the mind with the hands and getting away from that the world that you're living in. Like Jay says, for an hour a day or a couple of hours a week, just to go, actually, I'm doing this. I know a couple of fellas that have bought drum kits, yeah? They can't play drums, but they've got drum kits in their lofts or in their garages, And for an hour, 2 hours a week, they go in there and bang these drums. And it's a release.
Do you think it's a good idea to kind of prep people around us to say, listen, this week I'm going to have, what did you call it, Jamie?
You can call it a happy hour where you
happy
just,
hour.
You know, it's basically called me, myself, and I, where you just concentrate on you as an individual and what you need to just get yourself into a balanced place again. You know, and it could be walking the dog, it could be, as I say, going for a cold water swim. That seems to be quite popular. We know lots of people who do that as well. Going for a jog, you know, getting your easel out and painting what's in front of you. You know, there's so many things you can do, but that little bit about me, myself, and I, that happy hour once a week or twice a week will make a massive difference.
Do you think it's worth, you know, prepping the people, loved ones around us? Because you can imagine, just to all of a sudden hit that up, you know, I'm going to do me, myself, and I this amount of time. I mean, we're all entitled to it because it's our own lives. Every one of us are. But do you think it's worth kind of, you know, mentioning that to those around us to kind of ease them into saying, right, okay, you know, Scott's over here, he's doing his thing. Do you think that would be a good idea?
Definitely, because it then encourages them to think about me, myself, and I, doesn't it? You know, and saying,
yeah.
But rather than like people question, you know, why have you got your earphones on? Are you switching off from the world? Why are you being ignorant? Actually, I'm not being ignorant. I'm listening to something to get me into a good place because I enjoy music. It's just, again, explaining to people and saying, why don't you try it? You know, try it. Try and do something for yourself for an hour. You know, if it could be baking a cake. You know, it could be the most mundane things that, you know, people will often judge. But whatever works for anybody is good with us because we know that that takes them into a good place. And it can the most amazing, most simple things can be quite cathartic. And as I say, walking the dog works for me an awful lot. You know, just getting out with a dog and watching the dog enjoying herself is great for me.
Jay, could I just ask you? I've never asked you this before. No, but do you think? You know, it was at the end of the Civil War we got speaking about mental health and, you know, what the soldiers were coming back with. And a lot has happened from then till now with, you know, units and mental health first aiding. But do you still think that there is this taboo and this embarrassment with the word mental health issues?
I think slowly but surely we're removing the stigma around mental health, because, you know, you've got to think it in the same context as physical health. You know if you cut your finger, you put a plaster on it. You know, think about if your mental health is not in a good place, you need to make sure you get that, you know, that mental health first aid, whatever it may be. I do worry in terms of, like, you know, whether we should be in the 21st century, whether, you know, we shouldn't be getting judged, but we're in a world that does judges, and that does affect people's mental health. But from my experience, it is getting better, because, you know, we've had over 300 conversations with people in the last 2 years about their mental health. You know, that's an awful lot of people. You know, 5 years ago, we weren't having these conversations. And I think when people realise there's a group of people, or there's, you know, there's help out there, it encourages them to step forward and talk about their mental health. And we've got to do that. You know, we've got to talk about mental health, because everybody has mental health. Everybody exists on this mental health continuum in the world.
Yeah.
You've got to keep talking about it.
Yeah.
And like we say, it's okay not to be okay, isn't it?
Yeah.
100%.
No, and what do you think is the best practice? Because I know you guys are based in Wales, so, you know, you're quite familiar now with this territory. But for speaking for, well, actually, I had two questions. First one is, do you see a difference between the younger generation and the older generation? And perhaps different triggers for both, or is it quite similar? I know, you know, from your experience, do you have kind of like a bit of mix from old and younger individuals in your groups?
I mean, we do. We have, thankfully, we've got a lot of young workers who are now, you know, stepping forward to support, because, you know, the world of work for young people is quite perilous. You know, there's lots of insecure work out there. There's 0-hour contracts. People can't get mortgages. But we also see older people who want to stay in work, later on in life, because, you know, they need to stay in work for their own, you know, mental well-being. So we do see a wide range of people, you know, from people in the late 60s to basically people who were just starting off in work in the teenage years even. But, you know, I do think young people have now started to talk, you know, more than you know, the older generation, you know, the stiff upper lip as it was, yeah. you know, yeah. straighten your back, you'll be okay, go and have a coffee. You know, I think the younger generation realised that mental health is out there, everybody has it, and it is good to talk. And we do see, you know, quite a lot of good examples from our younger colleagues as well, the way they talk and the way they support people. I think we can learn a lot from young people.
Yeah. And what about, like I was saying earlier, you guys are based in Wales, you're familiar with this. If you're based in other places, what would you say is the best, you know, practical process when you're in a, you know, in a bad way and you're looking to get support? What would you kind of suggest or recommend for people to do?
Your first port of call, and this, you know, I've said this to a lot of people, that they go and see a doctor. That's the first port of call. Go and see a doctor. But a lot of my issues have always been somebody sitting down having a cup of tea and having that listening ear. You know, I know I've chewed Jamie's ear to ribbons over the years.
That's what he's there for.
It's if you don't feel right, go and see somebody. That's it. Don't bottle it up. Don't, you know, do, how can you say, drugs or drink or over, you know, it's...
Because that's the place where people go, isn't it? It's like,
yeah,
it's a cycle.
There was a thing a couple of years, like, before COVID, the figures were 80-20 to the females in going to see therapists or psychiatrists. And then through COVID, it went more 60-40, but to the males. And then once, this is what the findings are saying, once now it's gone back to it was pre-COVID. And that is because men are now going back to the pubs and they're self-medicating. And we've gone back to the thing of, well, I'm all right, there's nothing wrong with me. You know, and we've got to identify that if you're not feeling okay, or your mate's not feeling, you know, you see something in your friend, because this is one of the most embarrassing things to do, or people think it is. If I've got old acquaintances, 30, 40 year old relationships with my mates, and I can say, "Are you okay, mate? I'm only checking. I noticed you were doing this the other night, or I haven't heard from you. Remember, mate, I love you." And the lads that I say that to are like, "What the fuck are you saying that for?"
Yeah.
That's what it's about. That's what it's about. Having that hand on your shoulder to go, "Hi, mate." And it's a proper, you know, perhaps it's a later on, you know, in life, I'm not a young man. I'm in my late 40s now. But your friendships, if them friendships mean what you say they do, look out for your mates. Look out for the people that are around you. And if you see something, take it on yourself to go, "Actually, are you okay?"
Do you know,
that's what it's about to me.
What's quite interesting about this is, I think there's different types of friends as well, which I think needs to be identified.
Yeah.
Because you have different traits for different friends. Some of those friends may be your best go-to people. But in actual fact, it always leads down to the same route, which could be drink, it could be overindulging in, you know, drink or drugs, or, you know, or having that escapism. But in actual fact, it makes things worse. So I suppose as well, it's a case of having that mental opinion of, without being like horrible, you know, you really have to sometimes identify who's the best people at times of need and who's not. Because it's almost like, "Hey, come here, it's okay, come a bit." But in actual fact, you know, you could be doing some bad stuff.
Yeah, but if you feel as that your mental well-being is not in check, and you feel that you need to speak to somebody, Samaritans is the best. I know when me and Jay, when we went to a meeting a couple of years ago, a health and safety meeting, there was a lady from Samaritans there. Yeah. Do you remember Jay?
Yeah, Rachel Powley. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we got talking to her, and there is stuff out there that you just have to go looking for it. You know, and I know we've slated the phone and that, but it's all on there. It's all on.
Well, we're going to put it all in one place on your link. So, you know, we can send people there.
There's so much help out there. And I know, people can get lost in the system, and you know, you can end up staying on in the doctors and it being on lists and waiting, because waiting times are, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to go and see and pay for myself to go and see a therapist. And I urge anybody, if you can, go and talk to somebody that doesn't go, well, actually you did this, or you judge, or puts their take on it. Somebody that just sits back, like Jay says, and just listens to you. You know, Jay, that's what Jay did when I first met him. He didn't know me. We sat in his office, sat down, had a cup of tea, if you remember, Jay, and I told him everything. And we walked out of there, and Jay had known I'd tried to kill myself. I had turbulent relationships. I had anger issues, all this. And it was from that conversation, and it was only 20 minutes, Jay came to me and said, I think this would be for you. I think the way that you are, I think this training would be for you to understand what you are thinking.
This is where I'm going with the training. It's kind of like, how do other people get to where you guys have got? Because it sounds like a really strong bond, and it sounds like something which you've both worked and helped each other with. So, you know, if other people were to kind of imitate that, what would they kind of do? Is there a particular place where they can go?
There is lots of free training online. Certainly, yeah. As a start, I mean, there's all kinds of free courses online. Even like Zero Suicide Alliance, they do a free course. You know, psychological first aid, that's free online. I mean, mental health first aid, we provide it free as a trade union to our members as well. And I think sometimes, like I remember the conversation I had with Chris the first time I spoke to him. It was just me saying to Chris, like, you know what, we do live in an imperfect world. You know, and I was trying to say to him, try and embrace the positive if you can. I know it can be difficult, but, you know, trying to get someone to embrace the positivity that, you know, there is positivity around people, but very often they can't see it. With Big Chris, he's the perfect example that there is hope for recovery. But it's accepting the fact that we all hit flat spots in life. We all do it. We all have mental health. We all have frailties. We will hit these flat spots in life. And that's not a weakness. That is just a fact of life, that we will not live in this perfect world, and we will not always exist in where our well-being is in an absolutely, you know, excellent place. We will exist occasionally from time to time where we're struggling. And if we talk about it, people will support. The first ear may not be always the best listening ear, but if you keep searching for help, there is help out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I know November the 1st, 2022, Jay was the first, when I hung myself in the garage, Jay was the first person that I rung. And he was so, his exact words were, you've had a wobble. This is nothing. He goes, you know exactly. When I spoke to the Samaritans and that, they said, you need to take what you've tried to do it with away. And I've said, I've done all that. I'm a mental health first aider. That's what they teach you, to remove the item that you've tried to do, what you've tried to end your life with, a knife or whatever. In my experience, it was a drum that I'd stood up, and the belt, the strap that I knew that I'd taken to take that away. But it was Jay listening and saying, it's just a wobble, mate. Don't worry about it. And then that 3 months, I don't remember much about that really, 3 months, but one of my burning thoughts is that Jay and AD and my union, the Mark Walshes and the Anges and the Steve Donald and the Ian Corran and the Dave Brownbelt, they were the ones that had come and, how are you doing, Chris? And it might only be, you know, a text message or a quick phone call. How are you doing? How are you getting on? That's what means something, that people don't feel they're alone in this pit of despair. Yeah. And like Jay said it there, and I'm a big believer that you have to have hope, and you will have these little trips and falls of you've fallen back down or you've had something that's knocked you. We've got to have hope that we can get better.
Yeah,
we can live with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jamie, it's been fantastic to have some insights from you here. We're basically just, you know, we want to help people in different places at different times, and we're all different. Yeah. And with that, you know, with our last couple of minutes here, what would you recommend? I know we've gone through different parts here, but if you really had to say some wise words to all of our listeners, what would it be for those who are kind of, you know, bottling things up and not knowing what to do, especially in the workplace?
I'd say value yourself, you know, value the importance to you and seek help if you need it. You know, I mean, sometimes people say very often to me, oh, you know, you've got better things to worry about than someone like myself. And I say, no, I'm here to listen, you know, because we do see people who will devalue themselves and say, you know, I'm not deserving of anything. And we actually have to say to people, you know, please value yourself. You know, you're important. You know, importance to lots and lots of people. Please never, ever devalue yourself, because if you need help, recognize you need help and reach out for that support. You know, there's so many, I can give you so many examples of fantastic people out there having conversations in our workplaces. You know, just normalizing conversations around mental health if you can. Try and have a conversation about your mental health and what you need, because there'll be enough people who can help you. You know, and we use an acronym in our mental health network. It's called the HOPE acronym, and it stands for helping our people excel. That's what we try and do. We try and
help. Can you say that again? What does it stand for?
So our HOPE acronym stands for helping our people excel. Okay. Helping our people excel. That's what we try and do. And you know, we don't disqualify any experience that they're going through, or any troubled time they have. And what we try and do is improve or examples of them that there is hope for recovery. And that's why Big Chris is such a powerful player in our community, because, you know, he comes in and speaks to people and shows people that, look, you know, there is hope for recovery, because without hope, you've got nothing. So it's making sure you hang on to that hope, but also absolutely value yourself as an individual. And then anything's possible.
Love that. That's great. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jamie. It's been great. And for anybody that is experiencing any problems, we have your link, which is an app where we're about to find information on who to speak to and get some more support. And Chris, is there anything you wanted to add?
I'd just like to thank Jay, not just for coming on tonight, but for being there and checking in on me and being more than just a great friend, but just a great fella to be round and so positive. Thank you, Jay. From
you know, I have to ask this. I have to ask this. Jamie, who do you go to? I just have to ask this before we go, because like you must take on so much. But who's your turn?
Well, I mean, it's known when I'm, you know, I've got a really good family network around me. But we have like what they call triangular support. So every Friday, I'll get someone checking in with me. I'll check in with the second person and the third person. The second person will check in with the first person. So we have like triangular check-ins now and again. And again, if you've had a bad week, be honest and say, you know what, this week was crap, because people will then say, okay, tell me more about what's going on. Yeah. If you say I'm fine, you won't ask that second question. Sometimes you need to say to people, you know what, this week it's been rubbish. But thankfully, I've got immense support around me, and people like Chris. You know, he doesn't realise what he does for me when he speaks to me, because you know he is also a great person to be around. He really is. So you know, there's lots of good people out there. Just surround yourself with good people, as many good people as you can surround yourself with, and you know, life's journey becomes so much easier.
Absolutely. Well, do you know what? Thank you so much. And hats off to you as well, both of you, for hearing more about your journey together and also helping each other grow and do better. So, you know, until the next one, we are looking forward to, you know, cracking on and getting some more guests. So we'll be keeping you all in the loop on who's next.
Cheers. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Jamie. Cheers, Chris. Have a good day, guys.
Cheers, Bye. Jay. Thanks.